Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Last week, the Pacific Northwest's three largest frack gas projects faced major setbacks. In Oregon, the Department of Environmental Quality issued a resounding denial of the proposed Jordan Cove LNG project and the Pacific Connector frack gas pipeline, which have faced fierce opposition from a grassroots coalition for nearly 15 years. Meanwhile, in Washington state, Governor Inslee, who originally supported the Tacoma LNG facility and the world's largest methanol refinery proposed for Kalama, has expressed firm opposition to both these projects and any future frack gas infrastructure, something project opponents have been demanding from him for years. Today, we talk with some of the key activists in Oregon and Washington who have organized and mobilized to demand the rejection of these frack gas facilities. We have with us in the studio Dan Sears, Conservation Director for Columbia Riverkeeper, and by phone from Southern Oregon, Allie Rosenbluth with Rogue Climate. And in a few minutes, we'll be joined by two Kalama methanol opponents, Cam Keeley and Jennifer Vinard. Dan and Allie, welcome back to Locus Focus.
It's great to be here.
Allie,
hi, Barbara. Thanks for having us on again.
Yes, I think it was just last week we were talking. Well, I got an email from the Sightline Institute on Friday, and there was a bunch of articles about all the things we're going to talk about today. And then at the bottom of it, there was a little GIF, and it said, actual scene in the Sightline office today. And it was George Seinfeld and Elaine dancing in the doorway. And I thought that's probably how a lot of people felt last Wednesday when they got the news. So I want to just kind of start with the two breaking stories. And so we'll start with talking about what happened on Monday of last week, right after the show. And while Allie was smiling over the telephone during the entire show. And then in a few minutes, we're going to go up to Washington State and be joined by a couple of the opponents of the two of the methanol refinery in Kalama to talk about what happened on Wednesday. So first, Dan, what happened on Monday of last week?
Well, thanks to the incredible work from people in Southern Oregon and the tens of thousands of people who weighed in, the state of Oregon denied one of the key permits for the Jordan Cove LNG terminal and the Pacific Connector gas pipeline. The denial is a very significant blow to Jordan Cove. It's very substantive. There's over 200 pages of findings detailing the many, many ways in which Jordan Cove and the Pacific Connector pipeline would violate Oregon's water quality standards. When you read it, you know, it sounds as if the state has really done a lot of research. And what they found is that, you know, it's the applicant's burden. It's Jordan Cove's burden to show that they will not pollute the water quality of Oregon, that they will not pollute Oregon's rivers, streams, wetlands. And they failed to meet that burden again and again. In literally dozens of ways, they have failed to meet Oregon's water quality standards. And so what I took from this is that public pressure works, that this building campaign to deal with fracked gas all across the Northwest is having an impact, but most of all that the people in Southern Oregon who fought for their homes, for their farms, for their drinking water, for their estuaries, the people that Allie has been working with, they have won a significant victory in this very, very long 15-year running battle. And from here, we can see that Jordan Cove faces major headwinds. And so while it's not over, what they've accomplished is something that's really, really extraordinary.
Well, Allie, let's talk about some of the people that you're working with. And I'd also like to get a sense of what is this climate right now in Southern Oregon as a result of the decision that came down just a week ago?
Yeah, so people are really excited down here about this decision. This is the first time that the state has really come down on this project and showed their that they're going to hold Pembina to these high standards and put the public interest before the interest of this fossil fuel corporation. So folks are very excited, but we know it's not over. You know, in 2016, FERC denied this project, and, you know, here we are in 2019, still fighting it. So we know that we need to continue to keep pressure on our state, especially on Governor Kate Brown, to continue making these decisions that put Southern Oregon first before this fossil fuel corporation.
Well, I know that there was a little bit of cheering. It was more than a year ago when Pembina was trying to get DEQ to basically expedite the process. They wouldn't have to go through what they're going through right now. And DEQ turned around and said, no, you're not special. You have to go through what everybody else goes through. And there was a lot of cheering at that time. So I want to talk about how that decision, was that maybe a harbinger of the decision that came down last week? Al, you go ahead first.
About a year ago, the Department of Environmental Quality sent a couple hundred pages to Jordan Cove that listed all the ways in which this their application just didn't comply with Oregon's water quality standards, and we're asking for more information. And just like Dan said, for Pembina to show that this project wouldn't impact and pollute our waterways. And so just about a year after that was released, we got this denial because the company's response was clearly inadequate. And there's really no way you can build this project without really harming the waterways of Southern Oregon that are already in need of restoration and much more work to continue to be healthy, especially with the changing climate that we're seeing.
Well, I've only had a little bit of firsthand experience watching the process in Southern Oregon. I mean, just a few days when I was down there in March, but it was almost enough to get a really clear picture of what was going on with Pembina, because I went to a hearing in Coos Bay where Pembina was basically trying to get an exemption to one of the state land use law rules, Rule 16, and had to do with coastal management issues. And it was very amazing to watch the way they just seemed they could come in and just on a local level, from a local level all the way to the state level, just say, well, these laws and these regulations don't apply to us, and think they could get away with it. So I'm wondering, is DEQ starting to maybe show some more spine and saying to Pembina and hopefully to other similar companies around the state that might want to exploit our natural resources that, no, you are not above the law and you need to comply with all of our regulations? What about that, Dan?
Well, unfortunately, that's the history of rural communities, right? Is these extractive industries coming in and trying to be above the law. So I just wanted to add that. I think you wanted Dan to answer that question. So.
Yeah,
and that's exactly right. You know, where we've seen, you know, the incredible local activists from Coos and Douglas County sort of caught in a loop here of having to fight over really ham-handed, sloppy local land use applications again and again. That's why so many people around the state have kind of lifted their gaze and looked at, you know, state level decision makers to really make these important judgments about whether a project like this with so much destructive potential, you know, both at the local, but also at the global climate level, that's where the decision really needs to be made, is within these statewide agencies, because it's a statewide project. It dwarfs anything we've ever seen in the past. With even the LNG projects on the Columbia River didn't come close to the type of destructive potential of this project.
Well, as I found out by following the pipeline route, which is almost 400 miles long, it was a long trip, and it encompasses four counties in Southern Oregon and a lot of people, though, of course, they're much more sparsely settled than people are up in the Portland area. But the other thing that was really striking to me was how many jurisdictions are involved in making these decisions, because some of the permits that need to be issued are on a city level, some are on a county level, some are on a regional level, and some are a state level. And these processes are all going on simultaneously and not communicating with each other. So, Allie, I'm wondering, does having DEQ come down so hard on Pembina mean that maybe this will this in any way kind of help to coalesce all these other processes that are going through right now for all the other permits that Pembina has to get?
Yeah, so it's hard to say exactly what the impact of the DEQ decision will be on other permitting processes. I think at the local level, you know, this gives us a lot of, you know, a lot more information on just where Pembina falls short in reaching Oregon's water quality standards. But unfortunately, a lot of those decisions have been made in previous applications. So where we're at right now is actually challenging the decisions that have already been made for Pembina's or Jordan Cove's old applications, and making sure that those don't just get grandfathered in like Pembina is trying to do. So we're continuing that fight. We're continuing fights on all fronts. On the federal level, right now, we're in the public comment period for the draft environmental impact statement. So that's a really critical public comment period that people can right now get involved with. And also, you know, we're still waiting to hear back from the Department of State Lands on the removal fill permit, which is another state permit that could critically damage the likelihood of this project moving forward. And then in the midst of waiting for Pembina's Coastal Zone Management Act permit to open up so we can also have public comment on that. And I think the biggest takeaway from the CEQ decision is that this is such a tremendous victory for everyone who attended a hearing, who signed a petition, who wrote a letter, who made a call, who donated time and money to make their voices heard, and it worked. So we got to keep doing that to stop this project for good.
So do we know yet when the FERC hearing is going to be?
We don't have official dates, but we're thinking late June.
Okay, so we'll keep you'll keep us posted about this, and then we can keep the word going, and we'll probably do another show about this sometime in June as it's happening.
Yeah, I just want to add, it just takes a tremendous amount of work to keep people on this huge geography connected, and the work that people at Rogue Climate, Rogue River Keeper, and this whole coalition of Southern Oregon folks have been doing is really remarkable. And it was really, really gratifying to read the news stories about this and to see, you know, statements from the Klamath tribes being able to celebrate this decision just as much as people all the way over in Coos Bay. So keeping those folks connected is a tremendous challenge. And I just want to acknowledge that the people in Southern Oregon who are doing that work have been doing it for 15 years and have really been stretched thin. And from us up here in Northern Oregon, I just want to express my gratitude.
Well, I also want to express our desire to continue to help support, because when I was down there, I see how burnt out people are, and yet I also see how energized they are. It's amazing that people can keep this momentum up for 14, 15 years. And also, Allie, to put out a lot of thanks to Rogue Climate and also to Rogue River Keeper, because I heard this from people in more remote areas of Southern Oregon. They really appreciate the way that you come in and help organize their communities and give them a kind of support that they really need. And you're kind of like the Columbia River Keeper's role up here in rural Washington, keeping things going. So I know that they would, for them, I'm going to thank you a lot for what you're doing. Are you still there, Allie?
Oh, yeah, you can't see. It's radio. You can't see, but I'm smiling very big.
Okay. I just to say, you were smiling very big last week, too, but you couldn't tell us what you were smiling about. So now we know. Well, Allie, I want to thank you very much for all the work you're doing and for coming on today, kind of short notice. And we'll probably be in touch again in June and do a follow-up on what's happening with FERC.
Yeah, thanks for all your work, Barbara. It's great to talk again.
Okay, thanks a lot. We'll talk soon. So we've just been talking with Allie Rosenbluth, who is with Rogue Climate, based in Phoenix, Oregon, just south of Medford. And they are celebrating, I guess still celebrating, this decision that the Department of Environmental Quality came down with last week to deny the permits for Jordan Cove for their clean water issues. And just one last thing, Dan. So even though this permit has been denied, it's been denied without prejudice. So what does that mean?
It means that the company can reapply. And, you know, that doesn't come as any big surprise. I think even though it's without prejudice and the company can reapply, what's remarkable is the degree to which DEQ details the absent or inadequate information in the Jordan Cove proposal. It's hard to imagine, sort of like Allie was saying, it's hard to imagine a project with this level of impact meeting Oregon standards, because, you know, it's a huge climate polluter, it's a huge water polluter, and I think there is a really strong argument that this project is just fundamentally at odds with Oregon's clean water and climate goals.
Well, since there were over 200 pages detailing all the issues, it seems like it's going to be hard for Pembina, particularly in the kind of shoddy work they've done all along, and in the little example that I saw down in Coos Bay in March, that I can't imagine that they're going to be able to address these issues. So the question is, will DEQ hold steady and maintain that these issues have to be addressed before they would grant a permit?
That's the challenge we have in front of us.
That's what our work is, to keep DEQ's feet to the fire.
Yeah.
Well, in order to do that, you should keep listening to KIWU. Today we're talking with some of the key activists in Oregon and Washington who have participated in results that were very pleasing last week, where on Monday of last week, actually while the show was going on, the Department of Environmental Quality denied the permit for Jordan Cove's clean water permit, with 200 pages of reasons why they're denying it. And you're listening to Locus Focus here on KIWU Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPF in LPFM in Seattle. And we're going to continue talking with Dan Sears, who's Conservation Director for Columbia Riverkeeper. And now I think we're going to be joined by two Kalama activists, Cam Keeley, who is probably the youngest of the people fighting the Kalama methanol refinery, and Jennifer Vinard, who's one of the more recent people to come along. So Cam and Jennifer, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. So which one am I talking to first? Does that sound like Cam?
Oh, I'm Cam. Go ahead, Cam.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, Cam. So, first of all, I want people to get a little bit of your background. Where do you live, and what do you do, very briefly, and why are you on the air today with me?
Okay, I'm 17 years old. I live in Kalama. I've been living here my whole life. I'm a college student. I'm just about to graduate. Why am I involved with fighting the Kalama methanol refinery?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Because as a youth, then I know that a lot of people my age don't have a lot of time to do stuff like this, and I happen to live in an area where I am available to get involved. And I know that it's important, especially for people my age, because we're going to be the generation who's growing up in the world that's affected by things like the Kalama methanol refinery, like the Kalama LNG, like Jordan Cove.
And Jennifer,
yes.
you're pretty recent a recent Kalama resident. So I want to know, first of all, why you moved to Kalama and what you discovered when you moved there that was maybe something that wasn't on your radar when you bought your property.
Yeah, we grew up in Vancouver, my husband and I, but spent a lot of time in Kalama, fishing, hunting, rock hounding, camping. You know, this was our home away from home, and we lived below our means for 17 years to save to buy a home, and this was the only place that we wanted to move. And it wasn't until 5 months after we purchased our home, actually December 11th, when we discovered about the methanol refinery potentially going in, and it blew our minds that, you know, this is at the end of our road, at Kalama River Road, and we had no idea about it, and our realtor had no idea about it, and I spent that entire night going through research, and the more that I looked and the more that I found, the more terrified that I became that this would actually come true, and we love this area. We've always wanted to live here. And since the December 13th meeting, we've stopped unpacking because if this goes through, we don't want to stay. We don't want to be right uphill from all of the pollutants coming up our canyon straight to us. I mean, the amount of pollution that's supposed to come out of this thing is just astronomical. And, you know, who would want hexavalent chromium floating around in the air above your head? I mean, I don't think there's a person on earth that hasn't seen Aaron Brockovich and knows hexavalent chromium isn't something that you want, in addition to arsenic and ammonia and mercury, cadmium, selenium, lead, nickel. I mean, it just goes on and on. Formaldehyde. Those are all things that are going to be floating around in our atmosphere and dropping down on us. And it's you know, why would anybody trust the Chinese government to do what's right for us?
I wanted to, how did your family get involved in fighting the methanol refinery? Because it's not just you, right? It's your whole family that just...
Yeah, my husband and I, my kids are out of the house and away, so they're not here. But we just, you know, my husband is a union worker, and he would have the potential to work at this facility. And he wouldn't take this job. Of course, he would love a 10-minute drive to work instead of 2 to 4 hours of commuting time every day. But the cons just, you know, obliterate the pros on this project. And with the lies that have come out, I think it just reiterates why we don't want this here. And I think that everybody that's for this project because they think that it's going to bring in jobs, they're not looking at the facts, and they're not looking at the real details. And it's, you know, it's just a bait and switch, and they're just preying upon our need for local jobs here.
So I want to go back to Cam, because Cam, you've, as you said, you've been in Kalama your entire life. And I understand your entire family has been on the front lines of fighting this methanol refinery, correct?
Yeah.
And I want to know how your family found out about it, because you've been aware of it a lot longer, obviously, than Jennifer has.
Mm-hmm. Well, my parents have been living here for, I think, 22 years. And we all found out about the proposed methanol refinery in fall 2015, but we were on vacation for like 3 months, and so we couldn't get involved right then. The next event that happened after we found out was a hearing at Kalama High School in March 22nd, 2016, and we went to that. And then a local activist who is involved strongly and had been since 2014 with fighting Kalama methanol, his name is Gary Wallace, and he told my mom and I about, you know, the group and when the next meeting was, stuff like that.
What's the group? What group is this?
Just No Methanol 360, the people who are involved the most strongly with fighting Kalama methanol.
And so you started going to their meetings and...
Uh-huh.
And that's where I met you. And that was just a little over a year ago. So I want to turn back to Dan now. Dan Sears, who's in the studio with me and who's with Columbia Riverkeeper. And Columbia Riverkeeper has been involved in this fight for quite a while, too. And I think a lot of people in the Kalama area really are very appreciative that Columbia Riverkeeper has been on board for so long. There's some interesting things that have happened, a couple news flashes in the last couple of weeks that maybe will change the dynamics of this project. I wanted to talk about the first one that happened just 2 weeks ago, I think.
Yeah, and so about 2 weeks ago, OPB actually broke a big story. Molly Solomon did some really good reporting, and what came out of that story is that the developer of this project, which is a subsidiary of the Chinese Academy of Sciences, basically a subsidiary of the Chinese government, had been misleading regulators very deliberately about the purpose and impact of the project.
We haven't said that yet. So what was this project supposed to, what's it being sold as?
So first thing I want to say is, you know, both Cam and Jennifer have spoken to this already, that there's a strong sense in the local community that they were being sold something that was very, very rose-colored, a lot of lofty claims and promises that people, you know, to their credit, people in Kalama have been asking really tough questions for years and years. And a couple of those questions are, you know, the idea is that they're going to turn fracked gas into methanol and ship that off to make plastic.
Where? In China?
In China. And, you know, for 4 years, people in Kalama, including the mayor of Kalama, have vocally questioned whether there was any real commitment to ensure that the methanol would go to make plastic. And they were trying to argue that this was a way of stopping plastic from being made in more polluting ways.
The proponents, Northwest Innovation Works, which is the company.
So Northwest Innovation Works wrote this very self-serving environmental impact statement that claimed that they would have this huge carbon benefit by cleaning up the plastic's life cycle, none of which we believed or agreed with. And there are experts throughout the region, including from Stockholm Environment Institute, who really poked holes in their argument. But there was a big assumption at the base of all that, which was that they're not going to simply ship the methanol to whoever's going to pay the highest price. And I think everyone was highly skeptical that they had some committed plastics customer, and that, you know, if there was a change in the market, they wouldn't simply ship it off to make fuel, which means if you're shipping methanol from fracked gas off to make fuel or for fuel, that you're very likely competing with electric vehicles and much cleaner ways of powering boilers and making things move. And so that was the really remarkable thing. They spent a lot of time and a lot of ink in their EIS trying to argue that there was no need to look at the potential for methanol to be burned as a fuel because they were a plastics-only project. At the very same time, they were telling their investors the opposite. We were sent a copy of an investor prospectus that included page after page after page of Northwest Innovation Works and its representatives characterizing their methanol as, quote, convenient LNG.
Liquid sunshine.
Liquid sunshine, clean crude, all different ways to say our methanol will be serving a fuels market. And again, this is very important because they went out of their way to avoid this question in their environmental analysis. They went out of their way to mislead people about the purpose of the projects. Jennifer and Cam were both there when person after person speaking in favor of the project at the hearing talked about this plastics issue and said, you know, this is only for plastic back in December. And, you know, what's remarkable to me is that beginning with that December hearing where there were 1,000 people and the vast majority of them were opposed to the project, and going back years before then, people in Kalama have been leading the charge and in Calhoun County poking holes in this project and asking tough questions because it just seemed too good to be true to have this, you know, massive industrial facility that would have no impact whatsoever on the community. And that just wasn't believable. And so part of what's happening now is people are really getting a clearer picture of what this would be. And it's the world's largest fracked gas to methanol refinery. And with that, world's largest tidal comes with, you know, massive pollution, like Jennifer was talking about, tremendous climate pollution, like Cam was talking about, for future generations. And what happened this week, thanks to the work of folks like Jennifer and Cam, Governor Inslee changed his position, and he recognized this for what it is, which is a tremendous climate threat.
I want to back up a little bit about that, because Governor Inslee, it's not like he just came out against something that he hadn't done a very different pose on. Just a few years ago, he appeared in a video along with the mayor, then mayor of Tacoma, and the then port commissioner from the port of Tacoma, Tacoma Port Commission. And it was a video promoting what was then going to be the world's largest methanol refinery for the port of Tacoma. And he also, I think, came down, Governor Inslee came down to Kalama and also was a big backer of the Kalama plant when the Tacoma one was driven out by a huge opposition back in 2016. So Governor Inslee has like done a 180 on this. And I want to get a sense of what does that mean? And what does it mean that, for one thing, he was so in support of it when it first started?
So the first thing it means to me is, you know, the good work of the people of Kalama in raising the profile of this issue has had an impact, and their good faith communication with anyone who would listen about the impacts of this project worked. People did their research, they helped get the story out, and eventually, you know, it kind of forced him to take a new look at this issue. I think what's remarkable about it is it shows that climate leadership involves standing up to fracked gas. And as the governor of Washington, as someone who seeks to put the issue of climate change on the national radar, Governor Inslee made a huge step by moving fracked gas projects, these mega projects, and the decades-long investment in fracked gas infrastructure that's involved, moving that into the column of dirty fossil fuels that we simply cannot commit to. And that does not happen unless, you know, there are people like Jennifer and Cam and the dozens and hundreds of other people from Calhoun County who stuck their necks out and spoke up about this.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And we're talking today about the major blows to three big frack gas projects in the Northwest that we just had last week, when we're talking with Dan Sears, who's the conservation director for Columbia Riverkeeper, and two opponents of the world's largest methanol refinery proposed for Kalama, Cam Keeley and Jennifer Vinard. Well, Cam and Jennifer, I understand last Wednesday night you had quite a celebration in Kalama. In fact, I got an email from Diane Dick, who was commenting about it, and she says, "I'm down in Kalama right now partying." So I want to know, what was the response in your community last Wednesday when you got the word from that Governor Inslee had changed his mind? And let's start with Jennifer.
Elated. I mean, it was such a sense of relief to know that he finally could see the project for what it was and for what we've all been telling him all this time. And, you know, even in the most recent Daily News article published May 10th.
And that's the Daily News of Longview.
Correct. It said that Northwest pledged to compensate for all 1.1 million tons of annual greenhouse gas emissions in Washington. And my first question is how? How on earth could they compensate us for over 1 million tons of greenhouse gas emissions? I mean, what, you're going to throw money at it? That's going to help our environment? I mean, it just made such a big difference to know that Governor Inslee is finally realizing that, you know, this is going to be used for fuel. They obviously intended it to be used for fuel. If it was going to be used for plastics, it would have been 25 pages about plastics and one page about potential fuel use. Otherwise, you know, but in reality, it was 25 pages about using it for fuel and one little page about plastic use.
You're talking about that PowerPoint presentation that was leaked. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that that, along with everything else, I think that that was pretty, you know, like what made it a turning point for him is realizing that, you know, this is what they're giving investors. This is what they've been telling investors this whole time and telling us one thing, telling them the other. And who are we going to believe? And I just think that, you know, China, you know, they've got one of the most polluted countries in the world. And are we really going to trust them with our health?
Well, Kim, I'm wondering, were you at that party? I'm not sure if it was in a place that you're old enough to go to.
yes, I was there. I definitely got the feeling that we were all celebrating. We were all very pleased that Governor Inslee, he recognized the damaging impacts of frack gas, and he stepped up. When we got the call from another local climate activist, and I was really busy. I was about to leave for a four-day trip the next morning, and I think that everyone at the party dropped everything because we have been waiting for this for a really long time.
Well, what do you think, besides, do you think that there was anything besides that report the PowerPoint presentation that showed that that Northwest Innovation Works' true design was methanol for fuel as opposed to for plastics? Do you think there were other things that also might have put pressure on Inslee? I know that a lot of you were up in at the state capitol in Olympia back in February. It was a delayed celebration of his birthday, I think, because it was snowed out the first time. Yeah. But there you are on the steps of the Capitol, basically demanding that he come through. Do you think that that also had some impact?
Absolutely. Governor Inslee ran for governor under the pretense that he was going to oppose all, you know, frack gas projects and anything that's really bad for the environment, because the environment is what he prioritizes most in his campaign for governor and his campaign for president now. And I don't think that he wants to see any opposition from his people, especially as a presidential candidate. And we have been putting a lot of pressure on him. He has been facing a lot of opposition. We've really targeted him as the person that needs to stand up, because Governor Inslee is well-respected in the state. There's so many reasons that the Department of Ecology should listen to him. There's so many reasons that other citizens who maybe are on the fence about the methanol refinery should listen to him. And we have been asking him to publicly oppose the plant for, you know, as long as I've been involved, longer than that.
Why do you think it took him so long to turn around on this? Because you said that he ran on an anti-frack gas project, but actually the reality of it is that he gets a huge amount of fossil fuel campaign donations, and I think a lot of money from Puget Sound Energy, who is sponsoring the Tacoma LNG project. So why do you think it took this much time for him to come around and recognize that frack gas was as important to oppose as the very strong stand he's taken against coal and oil?
People who support frack gas and people like Northwest Innovation Works, who are trying to establish frack gas projects, are very convincing, and they do spend a lot of time trying to get politicians to support them and trying to get politicians to see the reasons why a project like this could, you know, potentially be good in their eyes, especially focusing on the amount of jobs that they say it would create. And I'm not saying by any means that it's true. I'm just saying these are the points that people like Northwest Innovation Works pitch to people like Governor Inslee. I'm not in Governor Inslee's head. I wish that I could, you know, tell you a valid reason why he would wait for so long to publicly oppose this. But at the end of the day, we're all just really glad that he did.
Well, I'm going to just like poke a little hole in our relation for a moment. I got an email from a friend in Seattle a couple days ago who's very involved with solar energy and really involved with renewable energy. And she was basically wanting to give me a rundown on Inslee's background. I don't even know what it was in response to the announcement that I sent out about this show, where I don't think I said anything negative about Inslee, but she wanted me to understand that he's basically has been a big climate champion and all the things that he's done. She didn't mention it, of course, that he had supported frack gas for all these years. So I emailed her back. I said, I'm very much aware of Inslee's track record on climate change and on renewables, and it's been very good. But I do believe that if he'd come out against, if he'd come out against Tacoma methanol, even before it became manifest much more in a grander scale down in Kalama, if he'd come out against that 5 years ago, it would have given all of you people who have been fighting the frack gas projects in Kalama and Tacoma 5 years to be working on renewables and working on a climate friendly future. And instead, you've been spending the last 5 years fighting these relics. And so I just kind of want to throw that out to you, all three of you. Is that a sense that you have? I mean, I do agree we should really be supportive of Inslee's position that he's taken. But about this other side of why it took him so long and the damage that's done.
It's easiest for me. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it's easiest for me to say, you know, water under the bridge, because I don't live in Kalama. I haven't had to deal with this and, you know, bump into my neighbors and business owners and other folks, you know, who are all over the place in their position on the issue. It's, you know, it's really hard for people in Kalama to go through 5 years of, you know, feeling like no one was listening to them. And that takes a lot of courage. I think that it, from my perspective, it also takes courage to learn on the job. To learn that, you know, Governor Inslee clearly saw the oil industry as a climate threat, clearly saw the coal industry as a climate threat. You know, he denied the Tesoro Savage oil terminal in Vancouver and accomplished a lot on clean energy already, you know, even before the latest legislation he's been signing. But frack gas, formerly called natural gas, has been branded as a clean fuel for a very long time. And the natural gas industry / fracked gas industry has been entrenched in politics in our region for also a very long time. I think it's just an incredible testament to the power of community activism that on the largest scale, you know, with the world's largest fracked gas refinery, people were able to persuade the governor of Washington that this was in fact a threat, where he originally saw it as an opportunity. And I think a lot of the credit goes to the people who continue to communicate with the governor and his office forcefully, intelligently, in very public, creative ways, and continuing to leave room for the governor to come in and to join the right side of this fight. And now he's done that. And I think that bodes very poorly for Northwest Innovation Works.
What do you think, Cam and Jennifer? Let's start with Cam.
Could you repeat the question?
Well, the question is your sense, I mean, do you feel like you've lost, like, the last, well, I guess for you guys, almost 4 years, where you've been spending so much energy fighting the methanol refinery that you could have put that time into something that was more productive in terms of really working towards a renewable future?
Yeah. Well, you know, the reason why I'm having such a difficult time coming up with an answer is because I need to choose my words carefully. And my personal opinion of Governor Inslee over the past few years was very affected by his support of the Kalama Methanol Refinery. And I know that many of us in Kalama have been hesitant to support him. And that's, you know, because of his stance on Tacoma LNG and Kalama Methanol and his silence on projects like these. I think that it's difficult for the people of Kalama to support a candidate who has been silent, but also we know that he's done a lot of good things for the environment too, and he could do even more good as president. So it's fantastic that he came out publicly on Wednesday. And we could have put a lot more time into actually, you know, fighting what we need to fight instead of spending time trying to convince the governor who calls himself the Green Governor.
I've seen him on Bill Maher a couple times touting that too in the Green State and everything. And sometimes, actually, the last time I saw him was just days before he made his turnaround on frack gas. And I was watching Bill Maher, and I just kind of wanted to slug him. I was like, "What about frack gas?" So I appreciate that he's come around, and I think it's very important that he has. But I kind of agree with you, Cam, that there's a frustration that it took him so long to do that.
Yeah, and I know that projects like Coloma Methanol, and as Dan said, are pitched to seem green, right? People are saying that, you know, frack gas is a bridge fuel, or they're saying natural gas is a bridge fuel. I'm sorry. I'm just used to using the actual terminology. There's a lot of support for types of energy that are not clean or renewable as a way to get us to a point where we need to be. But from my perspective, I don't understand why we can't just go straight to where we need to be. If we know what it is and how to get there, then there's no reason to say that we need projects like the methanol refinery, like LNG facilities, like oil or coal or nuclear, anything like that.
So, Jennifer, you're a little bit newer to the fight. What was your response to this?
I agree, obviously, with what they're saying. I think that it all came down to money and believing, you know, Governor Inslee believing what he was initially told, as do, you know, the port officials of Coloma and all of the people who are for this project, that, you know, they wanted to believe that this is going to bring, you know, millions to our economy, and it's going to help us out locally with jobs, and, you know, that it wasn't going to be bad for the environment, that they were going to do this and that to make it as clean as possible. And, you know, and then throughout everybody's hard work, we all started poking holes in those statements and found the truth, and found that, you know, the environmental impact statement was, you know, severely lacking in information and facts. And, you know, even now with the new impact statement coming out, you know, I wonder if it's going to contain the fact of, you know, shipping this product to China and them using it for fuel. How much would that really displace anything? And, you know, China is so dependent upon fuel. Most of their homes are still burning it. It's used residentially, commercially, industrially. It would cost hundreds of billions of dollars for them to convert their homes and factories into natural gas or other cleaner burning, you know, methods besides coal. And I don't think that coal burning in China is going anywhere. And, you know, that was one of the biggest things that struck me in the beginning was that China has never once said that they're going to close down their coal plants. And in fact, last year they approved $6.7 billion in new mining plants. So, you know, obviously, they're in no rush to shut down coal. They're in no rush to retrofit everything. And I think they're just trying to get the product as cheaply as they can from wherever they can. And I think that if the Coloma plant was built, it would struggle just as much because, you know, now Canada's building a natural gas pipeline that intends to feed China. And Iran just opened its second of three methanol refineries. You know, we have competition that people don't realize, and that's going to drive the Coloma price down, you know, again, driving down our profits. And who's going to take the risk? It's going to be us. It's going to be us taxpayers. We're going to be the ones that end up paying for it when it fails, ultimately.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle, and today we're talking about Governor Inslee's change of heart about frack gas, and that he's just come out very strongly last Wednesday against the Kalama methanol refinery that's being proposed, the world's largest methanol refinery, as well as Tacoma LNG. In a way, I was thinking as we're talking, it's too bad I didn't get somebody from Tacoma on to get their response too, because what I've been seeing, I haven't actually seen what Northwest Innovation Works' response to Inslee's statement has been, but Puget Sound Energy, which is going to build, which actually has built a 8-million-gallon LNG tank at the port of Tacoma, and they're going to build the rest of the facility. They came out very strongly on their Facebook page saying that this doesn't change anything. They're going ahead. It's clean energy. And then I read through the responses to their post, and it was this. I really have to give Inslee credit because he was being slammed so hard by these trolls. I don't know who they were. I mean, I could have gone and pushed a little bit harder to see what they were, but I'm assuming that they are members of the building trades. They're member people who are paid a lot of money by Portland, by Puget Sound Energy, to support the LNG facility. But it made me realize that this is still really, really divisive, and I think that there's in some ways even more venom up in Tacoma against what Inslee has done than there is in Kalama. But I'm kind of curious, are you finding people in Kalama who are responding negatively to Inslee's stand?
Both, yeah. I mean, we're finding people that, you know, that a lot of people don't even realize that this is still going on. They think that it's already over and done with, that it's a set deal. And, you know, people just want jobs. That's all that it comes down to. Everybody that's in, that's for this project, that's their only focus is jobs. And, you know, I knew that, you know, Northwest knew that going in, and I think that they preyed upon us and our need for local jobs here. And, you know, I think that it's sad that people won't look at all the facts, you know, look at what's being said and look at it from a fresh perspective, and, you know, rather than just thinking that we're going to have 1,000 jobs for, you know, Kalama or for Cowlitz County residents, and it's not going to be, you know, there's going to be maybe a quarter of the people that are from Cowlitz County that are working on the project, and then once it's finished, there would be maybe 10 to 20 local residents. The rest would all be relocated here, so you know, it's not a big boom to our economy. It's not a big, huge job creator like people are thinking. And even the apprenticeship program that they're touting is going to be useless because, you know, figure once this plant is up and running, say the apprenticeship program runs 2 to 4 years, when someone graduates, they're not going to be taking jobs from their current employees. They're going to have to move. They're going to have to relocate to another plant to use those skills that they just learned. You know, it would be rare that someone would actually be able to get a job here once they were all trained up. So, you know, they made these promises of jobs and money, and that's what hooked everybody. All the people that are for it, that's been their whole focus is jobs.
Well, Dan, I wonder, what do you see as what's going to happen next? What impact do you think that Inslee's statement last Wednesday is going to have on actually stopping the methanol refinery and Tacoma LNG?
So the next step in the process is for the port and Cowlitz County to release their final version of what's called a supplemental environmental impact statement. And so they were, after we won a lawsuit, they were tasked with doing an analysis of kind of cradle to grave, all of the climate impacts of this methanol fuel. And the draft that we saw in December, and Jennifer and Cam were both there at the hearing, was sort of laughably bad and very one-sided. And so when we see the final version, if it has similar flaws, ultimately the decision will fall to the state of Washington and the Department of Ecology to make the decision.
So the port of Kalama and Cowlitz County aren't the final deciders on that?
They're not the final decision makers. They're the next decision maker. And so they will produce a final environmental impact statement. They will make a shorelines decision. And the Department of Ecology ultimately has to determine whether this proposal, its climate pollution, its impact on the shoreline, whether that is consistent with the state of Washington's goals for protecting the climate and our shorelines. And there's yet another player, which is the federal government. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will also have to make a decision about the project. So it's it's far from being a done deal. And what Jennifer said is very important. You know, locally, some people think that the thing is not happening, and some people think it is happening. And so the incredible service that folks like Cam and Jennifer and the two Lindas and all the other, the rest of the team of the methanol, you know, folks and Gary and the incredible service they've been doing is keeping people aware that this is still very much in flux and a decision that has yet to be made. But from our perspective, we're looking squarely at the Department of Ecology. We think that there are overwhelming technical and policy arguments that demonstrate that this project is contradictory to Washington's goals for protecting the climate and for protecting the shorelines. And that decision is a very, very important step in the process.
So do you think that the Department of Ecology is going to listen to their boss and be influenced by what Inslee said last week?
We hope so. We hope that, you know, the statement from someone like Governor Inslee, who's, you know, certainly with this position on Tacoma LNG and the methanol refinery in Calama, can argue more forcefully that he's a real climate champion now. We hope that does resonate with Ecology. But fundamentally, I think they already have in place many of the arguments that they would need to say no to this. And to Ecology's credit, they wrote comments that were pretty strong about this project. You know, they were very carefully worded, but reading through the lines, they raised the very same question that came forward with this investor prospectus, the question of whether this methanol would actually be used for only one thing or whether it could go to any number of things, and whether the climate analysis put forward by the port in Calhoun County and Northwest Innovation Works was robust enough to capture all of those impacts. So from our perspective, we hope that Department of Ecology does listen to Governor Inslee and that they come to the same conclusion, which that in good conscience, we cannot find that this project would work for Washington.
Well, in the last few moments, I want to talk a little bit about something planned for this Saturday in a remembrance of Mount St. Helens eruption that's happening in Calama, which is another way to get involved in making sure that the Department of Ecology and Governor Inslee stays true to his word. So actually, Cam, why don't you talk a bit about what's happening this Saturday at Camp Calama?
Yeah, I'd love to. So on May 18th, then we have a No Methanol on Land and Water rally and a community picnic at Camp Calama. It's going to involve a rally with speakers on the beach, kayaks in the Calama River at the rally site, and a community picnic and music. Camp Calama is an RV park and campground that sits in the north end of Calama. It's one of the closest non-industrial businesses to the proposed refinery site, and it has a lot of permanent residents living there.
And Dan, why May 18th for this event? Because, I mean, when I saw it, I thought May 18th, that's the anniversary of Mount St. Helens eruption in 1980.
That's
is
right.
There any connection?
There is, in fact, buried in an appendix of the environmental impact statement that was issued years ago for this project, was sort of an admission that there would be a plume, a steam plume, that at least one quarter of the time would be longer or taller than Mount St. Helens currently stands. So you're talking over 8,000 feet. So when Jennifer talked about having these pollutants, this sort of both visual and air quality impact hovering over the community of Calama, that's actually borne out in the environmental impact statement. As sloppy as it was, it did acknowledge that there would be this mountain of pollution there. And the owner of Camp Calama, Charlene DeRozier, spoke to this very powerfully on the Capitol steps, talking about, you know, for a lot of people, it's not a climate change issue. It's, you know, they live in the community, they breathe the air, they rely on that river for fishing and the whole area to really sustain the community. And having the world's largest fracked gas to methanol refinery will have a real impact on the livability of the area. And so one of the messages we want to get across is that Calama is beautiful. It's an incredible place with incredible people. And, you know, I think that now that we have Governor Inslee's support in this effort, it's even more of a compelling message.
And we have a link on the Locus Focus website to the Facebook event for this event, so you can go there and find out. But very briefly, how do people get to Camp Calama? I'll let one of the Calama people tell us.
I-5 north or south to exit 32, which is Calama River Road, and it's just right there to the east of the freeway. You just go to the next street, I believe it's Meeker, and turn right, and it'll be right there on the left-hand side, and there's going to be plenty of parking, and like Cam said, there's going to be live music. I believe six different bands will be playing, community barbecue, there will be kayaking, just a family-friendly event to get people out and, you know, say thank you to Inslee for coming out in opposition, hopefully put some pressure on Department of Ecology. And, you know, if anybody, regardless of your stance on it, if you want to learn more about, you know, why we want to stop this, this is a great event to come to. And, you know, just a great day to come out and have fun and learn and just enjoy the community that we all love so much.
Okay. I don't want to rain on the picnic, but the forecast for Saturday is rain. So are there rain preparations?
There are a couple of tents coming,
Maybe some pretty big tents, but anyway, so we'll see you there. I mean, it sounds like a really exciting event, and it'll also give you an opportunity, as you can see Mount St. Helens as you're driving up to Kalama from several viewpoints, and it's 45 miles away. Imagine a plume of smoke that high that's only, a mile and a half away, and they'll give you a real sense of why people in Kalama are so opposed to this, among other reasons. I want to thank Cam and Jennifer for talking to us today live from Kalama, and we're looking forward to seeing you on Saturday. So thanks a lot for joining us, and welcome to Focus.
Thank you, Barbara.
And thank you, Dan, for being a regular here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
I'm sure we'll be talking about something else really soon.
It's a pleasure to be on today with the super activists, you know, Allie, Cam, Jennifer. Who are making a real difference in this.
And it's also very nice to have an opportunity to be happy about something.
Yes.
So thanks a lot. Today we've been talking with Dan Sears, Conservation Director for Columbia Riverkeeper, and Allie Rosenbluth with Rogue Climate and Kalama Methanol Refinery opponents, Cam Keeley and Jennifer Bernard. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on Cable Community Radio in Portland, KBFG, LPFM in Seattle. If you're just tuning in, you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. Next week we'll talk about the impact of proposed cuts to the Environmental Protection Agency with former EPA employee Betsy Sutherland. My engineer is Patsy Kohlberg. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Thanks for listening.
Now is the time. Now is the time for all good men to get together with one another. Iron out their problems and iron out their quarrels and try to live as brothers. And try to find peace within without stepping on one another. And due respect to the women of the world, just remember we all had mothers.
Make this land a better land in the world in which we live.
And help each man be a better man with the kindness that you give. And I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know done well we can work it out.